He was dead again when I got home that day. His corpse was in the kitchen, near the counter where it appeared he'd been chopping vegetables when the urge to stab himself through the wrist had struck. I slipped on the blood coming in, which annoyed me because that meant it was all over the kitchen floor. The smell was so thick and cloying that I could not localize it. This wall or that one? The whole floor or just near the table? I was certain he dripped on the carpet, too, while I dragged him to the bathroom. He was a big man, so that took a while. I wrestled him into the tub as best I could and then filled it with water from the cold cistern, partly so that the blood on his clothes wouldn't set and partly to let him know how angry I was. I'd calmed down somewhat. Cleaning the kitchen helped me vent. By the time I heard a sudden, violent slosh of water from the bathroom. He was often disoriented when he first returned to life, so I waited in the doorway until the sounds of sloshing stilled and his attention fixed on me. He had a strong personality. I could always feel the pressure of his gaze. "It's not fair," I said, "for you to make my life harder. Do you understand?" Silence, but he heard me. "I've cleaned up the worst of the kitchen, but I think there might be some blood on the living room rugs. The smell's so thick that I can't find the small patches. You'll have to do those. I'll leave a bucket and brush in the kitchen." More silence. A scintillating conversationalist he was. I sighed. My back hurt from scrubbing the floor. "Thanks for making dinner." I didn't mention that I hadn't eaten any. No way to tell, without tasting, if he'd gotten blood on the food, too. "I'm going to bed. It's been a long day." A faint taste of shame wafted on the air. I felt his gaze move away and was satisfied. In the 3 months he'd been living with me, I'd come to know him as a man of almost compulsive fairness, as predictable as the tolling of a Whitehall bell. He did not like it when the scales between us were unbalanced. I crossed the bathroom, bent over the tub, and felt for his face. I got the crown of his head at first and marveled, as always, at the feel of hair like my own. Soft curled, dense but yielding, thick enough to lose my fingers in. The first time I touched him, I thought he was one of my people, because only Morona had such hair. Since then, I'd realized that he was something else entirely, something not human. But that early surge of fellow feeling had never quite faded. So I leaned down and kissed his brow, savoring the feel of soft, smooth heat beneath my lips. He was always hot to the touch. Assuming we could come to some agreement on the sleeping arrangements, next winter I could save a fortune on firewood. "Good night," I murmured. He said nothing in return as I headed off to bed. Here's what you need to understand. My house guest was not suicidal, not precisely. He never went out of his way to kill himself. He simply never bothered to avoid danger, including the danger of his own impulses. An ordinary person took care while walking along the roof to do repairs. My house guest did not. He didn't look both ways before crossing the street either. Where most people might fleetingly imagine tossing a lighted candle onto their beds and just as fleetingly discard that idea as mad, my house guest simply did it. Though, to his credit, he had never done anything that might endanger me too. Yet. On the few occasions I had observed this disturbing tendency of his, the last time he had casually swallowed something poisonous, I'd found him amazingly dispassionate about the whole thing. I imagined him making dinner this time, chopping vegetables, contemplating the knife in his hand. He had finished dinner first, setting that aside for me. Then he had calmly stabbed the knife between the bones of his wrist, first holding the injury over a mixing bowl to catch the blood. He did like to be neat. I had found the bowl on the floor, still a quarter full. The rest was splashed all over one wall of the kitchen. I gathered he'd lost his strength rather faster than expected and had struck the bowl as he fell, flipping it into the air. Then he'd bled out on the floor. I imagined him observing this process, still contemplative until he died. Then, later, cleaning up his own blood with equal apathy. I was almost certain he was a godling. The almost lay in the fact that he had the strangest magic I'd ever heard of. Rising from the dead? Glowing at sunrise? What did that make him? The god of cheerful mornings and macabre surprises? He never spoke the god's language, or any language for that matter. I suspected he was mute, and I could not see him, save in the mornings and in those moments when he came back to life, which meant he was magical only at those times. Any other time, he was just an ordinary man. Except he wasn't. The next morning was typical.